Hello, everyone, and welcome to Burning River Radio. This is the baseball edition. I'm Joe Koblitz, and I'm here, as always, with Justin Lotta. And I think before we even start, we do have to mention that the Cavs just lost tonight. And buzzword, buzzword, cliche, buzzword, they'll get them next time. Right?
Good take. I think Ben and Danny should have you on the next Burning River basketball podcast.
I do too. I've watched so many games. I've seen, I think, 4 games this playoffs. Wow. I think this was this is at least 3, maybe 3.5. And I feel after watching 3.5 Cavs games, I am now as qualified to talk about the Cavs as anyone who has ever said that they're nervous when Cody Allen comes in to save a game.
So you're nervous right now, right? This is where Cody Allen's in, right?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that if you've ever said you were nervous talking about Cody Allen watching an Indians game, then I have the same amount of qualifications to talk about the Cavs as you do to talk about the Indians.
I would definitely listen to
all
your
right. Yeah, no, I don't have any. I don't care. That lady is me. I don't like that lady who tried to hurt Kevin Love all those years ago.
Oh yeah. So basically, she's still in the league too.
That's somebody else's take. That's not my take.
I've not heard that take.
Anyway, so for the Indians, you haven't heard that? Oh, it was a sign on the Indians post game show years ago. It was something like, "I don't like that lady who tried to hurt Kevin Love." Something like that. It's about the Kelly chick.
Yes, that's a good one. Not laughing.
That girl named Kelly who plays for Barferston. It's up. And by the way, it's Barferston is the correct pronunciation of that city.
Barferston.
Just listen to Barferston. You have to listen to Mayor Menino of Boston. He was the mayor for like 40 years. And he pronounced that city Barferston. And he lived there for so long, I'm sure he was right. Okay, on the Indians. They just swept up a little bit in Houston. It's good times, you know. Best team in baseball, pretty much. I mean, at least I remember game one. I watched on Root, which is the Houston TV station, because, wow, are they so much better than STO. But I was watching them there, and they were talking about how, you know, Houston was the best team in baseball and that the Indians were going to come take on the best team in baseball for 3. And I mean, I don't usually do series previews. I wrote a preview for this series because I thought it was a big one. And I was hoping for 2 out of 3. They took 3 out of 3. I'd say it wasn't even as close as some of the scores were. They really just straight up dominated them. Besides Houston hitting a couple home runs, you know.
Of Zach McAllister.
Which and they're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, in game one, too, of the series, they hit a couple home runs. But they're going to do that. They're a big power-hitting team. And I guess you're probably more pitcher-savvy than me. But I feel like the Indians pitching staff as a whole, particularly, let's say, Mike Clevenger, Danny Salazar, and Trevor Bauer, really match up well against a team like Houston or Detroit or Boston or Texas, where you've got a lot of big swinging guys. They hit a lot of home runs and they swing through a lot of pitches. I think that those pitchers who don't necessarily have great control really match up well against those teams. Whereas when they play the Twins and the Royals, they don't match up as well because those teams are willing to be patient. They're willing to wait for the pitch that they want to see. They're willing to go the other way. You can't, you know, like they can sit back and hit a guy or take walks against guys like Clevenger, Bauer, and Salazar. Whereas these more aggressive teams don't have that advantage, and they come in and tear them up. And I think that suits the team well for the playoffs. And I think it's why they did so well in the playoffs throughout the whole thing. Against Boston, Toronto, those were all really aggressive, free-swinging teams.
I think it's a lot like Toronto last year in the playoffs, too. I have to look at the numbers on this, but I think the fact that Bauer has a good breaking ball when it's on. Clevenger threw a really good breaking ball on Saturday, and I don't know, Salazar is effectively wild. And I hate using that buzzword, but Salazar is kind of effectively wild. So, you know, the chase rate, like you said.
We can use baseball buzzwords.
Okay, we can use baseball. Well, I hate using the buzzword in general because of it's its own thing. But I think the fact that those guys have those good breaking balls, and, you know, Salazar's got a good changeup and is kind of spotty with command, so you're not really sure what to expect from him. I think that helps because you remember Toronto, you know, the game plan against Toronto, even the Cubs last year, was throw a lot of breaking balls. And Bauer, I think he threw 30% breaking balls Friday. That was the most of the season for him. Clevinger threw, I don't know how many percentage of breaking balls, but his slider and his curveball got tons of swings and misses on Saturday. So I think I've looked the numbers on that, but I think that Houston's one of those teams that struggles with the breaking ball. The Indians do too. I don't think that's a secret either, but you saw the home runs that McAllister gave up today, and McAllister is pretty much 90% fastball most of the time. So at least he was today.
Well, that's kind of my point. I mean, if you're going to start off in at bat swinging, like, okay, let's say they get ahead of one, and then they're hitting them with sliders or curves, depending on who the pitcher is. And if you're going to swing at those pitches in the dirt, and I'll say it's not just Houston. Like you said, Francisco Lindor swinging at curveballs in the dirt the last couple of days has been really gross looking.
He's throwing his bat.
But, yeah, it's been really awful. But, I mean, if you're going to give the pitcher that advantage and swing at those pitches, especially a guy like Mike Clevinger, who's walked so many guys but is almost unhittable, you know, you can't square up his pitches. He's very, very difficult to hit. And he's been very difficult to hit for 3 years, you know, excluding a little bit of his major. You know, his major league debut wasn't great last season, but his AAA numbers are ridiculous. They don't even make any sense. So, you know, and since he's been up, he's been pretty unhittable. So if you're going to let him not throw you a fastball, if you're going to swing at that curveball in the dirt when he's up 0-1, then you're never going to get a hit off of him. And that's pretty much what happened on Saturday. He gave up two hits the whole game.
You know, what's interesting about that, though, is that it's kind of the same approach the pitching staff had against Tampa Bay, but Tampa Bay just hit a ton of home runs, and the offense for the Indians didn't show up except for the couple things against Chris Archer. So they didn't do anything different.
Well, obviously, cliche buzzwords, you have to make your pitches. You have to execute. You do have to throw, and that was the one with Salazar's today, is first home run. You know, you have to throw pitches in other locations than that. You have to be, even if you're up 0-2, if you throw a pitch right down the middle, they're going to hit a home run. The whole advantage of being up 0-2 is you can make a guy expand his strike zone. He's not expanding his strike zone if you throw right down the middle. So you have to, you know, you still have to make that pitch. And against Tampa, obviously, they didn't make the pitch. The pitches through the whole series.
Yeah, I think the bullpen got knocked around a little bit against Tampa. I think that explains the Tampa series a little bit, though. It was a little bit of bad execution, a little bit of Tampa just being really hot. I mean, you see Chris Dickerson still doing it right now. So that's why I think that overreacting to how bad the Tampa series.
Well, no, actually, to me, Tampa Bay doesn't exist after the Indians are done playing them. Like, they, at the 18th, they were done. I have no clue what they're doing right now.
They have to go to Tampa.
I know. I'm just saying, for right now, I've completely moved on. I'm focused on Houston. Now we're going to Cincinnati. I'll focus. I've been focused on Cincinnati for a little bit because I like the Reds. I like to follow the Reds, see what they're doing. But Tampa, they're out of the division. I just don't care. I don't see them as a playoff contender.
They keep hitting home runs. They're good pitching, they can be. But, yeah, maybe not me. So that was my point. I think
a lot of people overreact. A lot of teams hit home runs.
Yes. I just think a lot of people overreacted to the Tampa Bay series and how bad things went. That was my point.
Okay. Well, yeah, and if they scored a ton of runs against Tampa. Which was, they average, okay, they got, well, let me do some math here. They scored 16 runs in three games. For a team that had, they scored one run total in the first two games against the Twins. To score 16 and 3 is a pretty big, dramatic difference. I mean, they only scored 16 against Houston, and they swept that series.
Yeah, better pitching. That's really what it was, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So that was a huge turnaround against Tampa to actually be able to score some runs. It doesn't matter who was pitching, because it's not like the Twins have five aces. You know, it doesn't matter that. I honestly, Houston has better pitching than Tampa does for the most part, I think.
You know,
Chris Keuchel didn't pitch in this series.
I didn't even see their best pitchers this weekend, but yeah.
Yeah, that kind of hurts for Houston. But still, I mean, just the fact that the Indians were able to score some runs.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like I said, they're 5-1 against them, and they won a game today where they didn't need Miller or Allen or Shaw, even though McAllister came pretty darn
close. Or Jose Ramirez.
Or Jose Ramirez, apparently, even though Eric Gonzalez did absolutely nothing, he didn't kill the team.
Well, they scored 8 runs without and gave Ramirez a day off, and I think that's kind of a secondary topic here. It was Ramirez's first day off this year. Yeah, Lindor, Encarnacion, and Santana have not had a day off, although Encarnacion and Santana have switched off every once in a while. I would personally like to see – now, Chris, they go into Cincinnati, so that makes it easy to give either Santana or Encarnacion a day off. Or you could play Santana and Wright and just say, fuck it.
What do you do? Well, that's a good question.
I'm kind of into.
What do you do right now? Do you move Chisnall over to center? Because he's swinging the bat well. But that means you sit Zimmer. So if you want to put Santana right, you got to sit either Chisnall or Zimmer.
I also think that there could be a roster move upcoming. Daniel Robertson hasn't played since the second game he was on the team.
He's
I think you keep going in and out. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
I'm sure that they'll wait until Jackson gets back, and then that'll be the roster move for Robertson.
Well, I was going to say, I kind of almost wish they would dump him for a pitcher. You know, No.
Oh, well, maybe there it is. Maybe there it is.
No. I was actually thinking Corey Kluber. But my point being that Zimmer may go into more of a part-timer role anyway, kind of like splitting the bench time that Robertson has right now with Jackson when he comes back. I guess you're talking about him coming back too. But I wouldn't have a problem. You go to Cincinnati and for one of the two games, play Santana in right field, Brantley in left, and I mean, if it's a right-hander, you would do Chisenhall in center. If it's a left-hander, you do Zimmer in center. Because Zimmer's going to have the better defense and better splits.
Or you can finally give Brantley a day off, too, actually.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad either, although you don't want to bench. You're already losing. You're already having your pitcher bat. You know, so you're already losing one spot completely. You don't really want to lose three spots.
Three.
You know, you don't want to keep adding on to that and missing other spots out of your lineup. So, you know, you're talking about taking out Encarnacion or Santana or whatever. You don't want to lose all those bats out of your lineup. You want to keep as many as possible. What I would personally like to see, let's say they play Santana and Wright one of the games. The other game, Encarnacion gets his first day off. I'd like to see maybe on Wednesday or Thursday give Kipnis a day at DH and give Santana a full day off or something like that.
So it's just 2 days.
What's that?
They're only in Cincinnati Monday and Tuesday. It's a split series.
No, but they're also against Cincinnati on Wednesday and Thursday. So that's what I'm saying.
But they're at home.
So on Wednesday when they come. Yeah, so when they come back Wednesday, let Kipnis DH. And bench Santana. For one day, you know, one day. It gives Kipnis a day off and it gives Santana a day off. Or you could do it with Lindor too. It just doesn't make as much sense because so much of Lindor's value comes defensively.
Doesn't mean it
that I figured. Well, that's what I'm saying. So you give Lindor a full day off, just whatever.
Yeah.
If you're going to be missing his defense anyway, just give him the full day off.
The way he's hitting the ball right now. He's not really hitting, so I mean, he could use a day off, I think.
Yeah, I think that would probably be good. Within this week, they played the best team in baseball and won 3 out of 3. They are now playing a last place team, a last place team, a last place team, and a last place team in a row. The Royals, A's, Royals, and Reds. That's a lot of games. It's a 4-game series against Oakland. There's 2 3-game sets against Kansas City. And there's a 4-game set against Cincinnati. Well, I guess Cincinnati's not a last place team, but they're all terrible teams. So that's, yeah. I mean, you're talking about, you can't, everyone always wanted to take out that 14-game winning streak. You've got a potential 14-game winning streak brewing right here. I mean, there's no reason they couldn't win every single one of these games over the next 2.5 weeks until they play the Colorado Rockies. What's that?
So especially when they get Kluber back at some point during the stretch, too.
Yeah, and they don't play the Rockies until the Rockies are on June 6th. And that's the first good team they're going to play. And then they play the White Sox again. And you know, then they're going to play the Dodgers after that. So really, let's say up until June 19th when they play the Orioles, they have 5 games against decent teams. That's almost a month against terrible teams. Plus you got 3 off days early in June. That's...
Well,
I mean, if they don't just,
because that's usually the Browns.
Well, I'm just saying, if they don't completely dominate and take over the Central and not give it up again after that point, then I would say that there's a serious issue with this team. Because that's when you have to. I mean, when you're talking about the Browns, like it's so much different because you're 1 game equals 10 games in baseball, and you're not really like, so it's such a bigger deal to win a single game, and you can kind of see which teams are going to be great and which teams aren't. They're not going to win every single one of those games. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that they're going to win enough of them, and they're against the right teams. You beat they got 4 against Minnesota in mid-June. That you know, that's a big series. They got 6 against Kansas City, 3 more against Chicago. If they can beat up on the division and really just make it, put a gap in there, they can kind of, you know, start coasting a little bit, I think.
So are you saying this is the cast? It keeps in the cast. Is this the Indians' most important stretch of the year so far, or potentially of the year period?
No, it's like the least. It's like the least important.
I guess if they don't perform well on this stretch.
Yeah, they should.
Then
okay,
wrong.
I guess what I'm saying. Yeah, okay, you've got guys who are already underperforming, and it looks mostly a lot luck-based and a lot defense-based. I just wrote something the other day about the Indians pitching staff coming back. Like how long is it going to take them to get back on track, guys like Salazar and them? And Salazar pitched pretty well today. Not great, but decent. And Clevinger obviously was incredible in his last start. But what I noticed, they Indians are first in all of baseball in XFIP. When I looked the numbers up, they were last in ERA. And then after Clevinger's start, they moved up 2 spots in ERA. But they were literally first in what their ERA should be and last in what their ERA actually was. And a lot of that was the fact that they have this gigantic batting average on balls in play. And I think some of that batting average on balls in play has to do with the fact that the outfield defense has been terrible to this point prior to the Zimmer promotion. And guys have been crushing the ball. When they make contact with Bauer and Salazar, in particular, they've been hitting the ball extremely hard. And when you hit the ball extremely hard to the outfield and you've got shitty outfield defense, you're going to have a really high batting average on balls in play. And I think a lot of that stuff is going to start coming back into more normal numbers. So you not only are playing bad teams, but you should also see some return to the norm. With those guys particularly. And like you said, with Kluber coming back, and Carrasco's pitching on Tuesday against Cincinnati, so he's got a little puff game. Although, I shouldn't say that. Cincinnati has one of the best offenses in baseball right now, and they have literally the best defense in all of baseball right now, so that's not like their cakewalk. But
you can also factor in the fact, you know, Bauer and Salazar and Kluber to a point, and obviously Tomlin does and always will, have high home run rates. and that, you know, home runs aren't put into bat, batting average on balls in play, so that's also going to.
But they do count an XFIP. Yeah, they count an XFIP.
For batting average on balls in play, you're still only talking about the balls that are getting in the outfield where the outfield was struggling. That doesn't even include the home runs. So it's twice as bad as far as batting average on balls in play because that excludes all the home runs they've given up lately. Which makes it even more fluky. Yeah.
But although everybody's given up home runs, there's home runs everywhere right now. I'd like to – now, we did mention that Kluber was coming back. Obviously, Tomlin's coming back on Tuesday. Or not Tomlin. Carrasco's coming back on Tuesday. So you've got everybody back. What's that?
Maybe it's like Kluber, maybe 2 weeks.
I think he's closer than that. I mean, he pitched – he threw 50 today. I guess you guys were saying maybe Friday he'd throw a rehab start. I can't imagine.
Maybe he only needs one.
Yeah, I can't imagine. He hasn't been out that long that he needs more than essentially two rehab starts because he had one today. It wasn't against real. It wasn't in a real game. It was against real hitters. It just wasn't in a real game.
Or was that yesterday he had that? I don't know if it was real hitters or not. Because I don't know if you've seen the captain's offense this year, but. That's been great.
Hey, those are the guys that were in Arizona 2 years ago, so I like those guys.
Yeah, well, they can't.
the last good AZL team the Indians had was headed by Yu Chang Chang and Bobby Bradley, and they're in Double A right now. So you can see how good the AZL team has been for a few years. Except for, I mean, they've got sparks like Tristan McKenzie, but as a whole.
And neither Bradley or Chang has hit the ball real well in Akron either.
Yeah, we're not going to worry about that right now.
I'm just pointing out it's not a good sign.
Kluber could be back by the end of May, definitely by first week of June. So you're talking about 1 to 2 more starts by Clevinger before we're having some roster issues.
Maybe.
Well, that they have 6 starting pitchers.
That's not a bad thing.
Well, now I'll say one solution, and there's this idiot who writes for me, and his name is Michael Milleregno. And I remember back, I've known him since about 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. And when I met him, he was so huge on CC Sabathia needs to be moved into the bullpen. He'd be the greatest closer ever. CC Sabathia needs to be moved to the bullpen. Over and over. Because he always, whenever he says something, he has to say it like 15 times in a row because he's probably autistic. And he just, you know, like he thinks he makes a good point and then he just says it over and over again until you say, okay, that's enough, I'm leaving, I can't talk to you. And then he thinks he wins the argument. That's how he runs things. Anyway, so that was his thing. Like, CC's got to be a starter. And then he did it again over and over again. Fausto Carmona's got to be a closer. Fausto's got to be a closer. And he would keep going with every pitcher that came up for the Indians. Oh, he'd be so good as a closer. And so, of course, in the middle of Clevinger's no-hitter, he's throwing a no-hitter through, like, 5 innings, and he goes, Clevinger should be in the bullpen.
If you say things
so enough, that's one solution.
You get it right.
What's that?
If you say things enough times, you actually
No, I don't think so. I think that's a terrible idea. First thing, for anyone who agrees with him on anything, that Danny Salazar should be put in the bullpen, that Trevor Bauer should be put in a bullpen, your best pitchers should be your starters because they throw 200 to 250 innings per season. A reliever throws about 60 innings per season. Would you rather have your best pitcher throw 220 pitch innings or 60 innings? I mean, that's really simple math. It's so obvious. It doesn't, like, there shouldn't even be an argument there. If Andrew Miller could throw 6 innings a game and pitch every 5 days, I guarantee you he'd be a starter. He proved he couldn't do that. They tried to do that for years. He couldn't do it. That's why he's a reliever, because he's not capable of starting. So to me, like, if you have a guy who can come out there and give you 5 no-hit innings, he should probably stay in the rotation. And I'm not saying that because Clevinger has almost thrown two no-hitters this year already, that he is that pitcher. Because I saw, I was there in person when Billy Traber threw a one-hitter against a very good Yankees team. I've seen last year Cody Anderson, or was it 2 years ago? Cody Anderson came very close to throwing a no-hitter against the Tampa Bay Rays. So I've seen a lot of guys make really good starts once. Josh Tomlin threw a one-hitter against the Mariners when they were a pretty decent team, what, maybe 2 years ago?
Probably three. But yeah.
The years all flow together at this point. The point is, pitchers can have great games even if they aren't great pitchers. But I believe Clevinger in
– what was his name? The guy
Armando Galarraga?
The White Sox. Armando Galarraga and who was the White Sox pitcher? That Philip Humber. There you go.
Okay.
Had to get that in there, sorry.
Okay, I was thinking of Galarraga, the Tigers pitcher who had that one that
Philip Humber actually threw a real perfect game.
Okay. Yeah, so it happens. I mean, the Natty Joss threw one. So if he could do it, anyone can.
Sure.
Yeah, pretty much. Someone was comparing Andrew Miller to pitchers from 1968 or something like that. Anyway, where'd he go? Yeah, so Clevinger's numbers in the minors, particularly, and I'm not going to say you could have great numbers in the minors. Again, if you could pitch a few good games in the minors, Travis Barnhart just pitched a good game in Triple A. That doesn't make me think he's going to be a great major league pitcher. Clevinger, in his first ever Triple A start, almost threw a no-hitter in the playoffs. And then his next start, he did the same exact thing again in the playoffs. And then he had an entire season in Triple A where he had an ERA of 1-something. I'm not going to look up the numbers because I really don't give a shit. And I've seen him enough to know that it's close enough. And then this year, he was completely dominant in AAA again when he was there. There's absolutely nothing else for him to learn there. He is a decent pitcher. He's not an ace. But he's good enough to be a number three on almost any team in baseball. And he's certainly good enough to be a number five on the Indians. And he's certainly better than Josh Tomlin, which I wrote about like the first week of the season and people gave me shit for. But look what he's done compared to what Tomlin's done this year. Like, there's no question at all that Clevinger's far superior to Tomlin. Justin's speechless.
Yes, that was a great point. I'm stunned.
Well, I thought you had a point. But...
No, I mean, I agree. I mean,
six-man rotation. Yeah, that's yeah. What, so we're talking.
Six-man rotation. I mean, no one's really done it. That's the problem. Nobody really
does. The Rockies have done it. The Rockies did it a year or two ago. The Braves did it a year or two ago. Maybe it was 5 years ago. If I say a year or two, a reminder that the last 10 years of – yeah, the last 10 years have really, really run together at this point. I feel like 2013 was yesterday.
Nobody's really used the six-man rotation long-term. It's been for stretches, but nothing really long-term. That's the only odd thing.
Well, I don't think it would be long-term. I don't think this would be long-term either.
No, and I don't even know if they should necessarily use the six-man rotation as much as maybe some sort of piggyback role. There's an article I was reading earlier today on Just a Bit Outside from Fox, which they should have never got rid of, Just a Bit Outside, from an author named Russell Carlton, who kind of came to the conclusion, there's a lot of gory math in there, that maybe a piggybacking solution would work where you have six starters and, you know, there's three starters and three guys that follow those starters on each given day. So maybe, and this will never, you know, obviously won't happen this year.
I think, honestly, I wrote that article last fall.
Under your alter
ego. I wrote that last fall, and it was about, like, if you had one ace who could go out there and give you, like, seven innings, could you then have a regular sized rotation where you were only expecting each pitcher to give you three innings? And I wrote it because that's what they do in like extended spring training and in sometimes in AZL and a lot of the time in instructs. They'll have a pitcher come out, throw three innings, and another pitcher come out and throw three innings, and then, you know, the closer will come in.
Yeah, and that would work.
So And so I wrote that about the Indians, talking about like, okay, so you bring in Tomlin, you have Tomlin pitch three or four innings, then you have Bauer pitch three or four innings, and then you got your closer. And I did write that article last year in the fall at some point, and essentially my conclusion was no, you couldn't, it wouldn't possibly be feasible because somebody, it's going to happen too inconsistently where they're actually able to pitch that and then they don't want to. Like, what if you're throwing four shutout innings? You don't want to take out that guy after he throws four shutout innings. So now you're messing up your whole rotation because you want him to go six. You know, and then you don't know. Maybe that's not going to work out perfectly. I mean, it's kind of like when the Indians had an eight-man bullpen. They never, whenever they've had an eight-man bullpen, they've never used it efficiently because somehow it's always lined up where the pitcher's always pitching well. So if the starters are always going seven innings, then you need six innings, then you need three relievers to throw an inning apiece. You have 7 minutes. If you had a six-man bullpen, you would never have a guy pitch back-to-back days if you didn't want to, right? So starter goes six, three guys pitch. Starter goes six, the other three guys pitch. And then the next day, starter goes six, and you go back to the original three, or you have that other guy from the seventh man. The eighth man is never getting into this mix, especially when you're talking about winning games. So, like, starter goes six, you're winning, you're using your three best guys. Starter goes six, you're winning, you're using maybe two of those same guys and one other guy. So you're really not getting in those other, you know, that those last two guys into the games. And that's happened with the Indians every time they've done an eight-man bullpen. So I think if you're talking about doing the piggyback as a whole, well, when they had Cologne up, they don't have any, they have a seven man right now.
No, they have an eight.
But when they had, are you sure?
Armstrong's up right now.
They have Robertson. All right.
Armstrong, seven. Allen, Logan, Goody, McAllister, Miller, Otero, Shaw.
Okay, yeah, if Armstrong is up, that probably means eight because they didn't send Goody down. Anyway, mm-hmm. But they're not all – well, when was the last time Armstrong pitched?
It's been a while, yeah. Like that's your point, right.
Yeah, so they're – yeah, because when Joe Colon was up, he was up for 3 or 4 days. He never pitched, and they sent him right back down. So essentially that's my point with that. And, I mean, that's a long-term thing. It, specifically – and that's a theoretical more. Realistically, with the Indians right now – I'll say, writing that thing about starters the other day, I never noticed. I've always noticed how Salazar strikes out, you know, 10 guys a game. I've never noticed how he almost always hits 100 pitches in like the fifth or sixth inning.
How do you miss that?
Well, I mean, like, you notice it when it happens in the game, but you don't realize it happens every game. Looking back over his game-to-game starts over the last couple of years, it's like every single game. He's getting taken out by the sixth inning because he's in every single game. He's given up 100 pitches. He can have a shutout. He could give up five runs. It's the same every single time. So if you're talking about piggybacking a starter with Salazar, that there's a point to that. Although I think still he's still going six innings or five and a third or whatever. So you don't really need a full starter because you're still going to want to use Allen and Miller at the end.
That's why, I mean, the piggyback.
So then you talk about
maybe that works better in the playoffs because, you know, you get to the point with like, okay, like a guy like Josh Tomlin who you would really like to avoid, you know, time.
Well, this is penalties. No, that's
different conversation.
Okay, the Tomlin thing. Well, I want to say like because Salazar, we're talking about, that's an elite starter. He strikes out a ton of guys, and his problem isn't that he's giving up runs; it's that he's throwing too many pitches. That's a problem Bauer has too. It's not necessarily a problem Tomlin has, but let's say you're talking about Clevinger and Tomlin, and that because he's a veteran and because Francona loves veterans, you're going to give the nod as a starting pitcher to Tomlin, and then Clevinger's going to mop up after him. Well, you're essentially saying Tomlin sucks. We know he's going to give up four or five runs. We just don't want it to get out of hand. So we're going to have this other starter waiting to come in for him. Why not just cut out the middleman and have Clevinger start? We know Clevinger starts. We know we can go 6-7 innings. It seems really wasteful.
I think it maximizes your roster.
How, though? Because you know that he's better. Like, the whole purpose of having a backup guy for Tomlin or Bauer is that you're scared that they're going to just completely lose it 2 innings into the game. You're not talking about them going 3 innings or 4 innings and getting replaced. You're talking about them coming in the first inning and just blowing it. And that's why you want that backup guy. Because if they can go 4 innings, they can throw Dan Otero for 2, and they can get right back into the bullpen. It really doesn't hurt things.
That's fine. And I'm just, again, spitballing idea. That's why I still think the 6-man rotation might be a way to look at things for the staff. But, I mean, my whole point of this is I think Clevinger's too good to send down. I don't think at this point they can send him back to AAA.
That's absolutely true. And, of course, now that you said that Armstrong is up still, you could definitely send down Armstrong. My opinion on it would be put Tomlin in the bullpen and never use him. Treat him like a Rule 5 pick. Well, no, let me explain it, I guess, then. If you cut Tomlin, he's gone. Someone's going to claim him off waivers. He's got a really team-friendly deal. He's still a really serviceable pitcher, you know, for most teams. If you cut him, DFA him, he's gone immediately. There's no way he's hitting AAA. Same thing's true with Bauer, except faster. Like, he'll be claimed so much quicker. So you can't cut either of those guys. So like I said earlier about my basketball cliches and watching 3 games of NBA this year, if you're saying after his next start or next time Tomlin gives up a home run, cut Tomlin, cut Bauer, you're a fucking idiot. Okay? You're just a moron. You don't do that because they're valuable. You're valuable. You cannot cut a guy who doesn't have options. You know, you can send down Armstrong 500 times this year if you want. That's fine. You cannot send down Bauer once. That's just the way baseball works. Learn a little bit about the arbitration agreements, we were talking about it, 2 weeks ago? The reserve clause. Learn about how the reserve clause works.
There you go.
You're only allowed to send guys down so many times. So they cannot send those guys down. I think the best rotation is Clevinger and Bauer on the back end. I would put Tomlin in the bullpen because you assume someone was going to get hurt at some point in time this year. And then you'll have him to go back in the rotation. And I wouldn't use him. I mean, I'd use him in relief. Like you said, let's say Salazar throws 100 pitches in 3 innings and gives up 5 runs. Well, then you bring Tomlin in and let him throw 3 or 4 innings. You know he's probably going to make it worse, but it's already pretty bad, so who cares? You can punt on a game every once in a while.
So this is the
Indians are so much
Go ahead. No, finish.
I said the Indians are so much better than the rest of the division that they can afford to punt a game every once in a while. You can't afford to punt every 5 games. And not that Tomlin really is punting every 5 games, but it's about as close as you can get.
And Houston's doing the same thing right now. Houston's throwing out Mike Fiers every 5 days, and he's got the same issues as Tomlin. He throws a little bit harder, doesn't strike anybody out, and gives up a lot of home runs. But they're still sending him out every 5 days because they have Chris Devinsky in the bullpen. And that's the other role I'd be interested in to see Clevinger use. Not that I don't want to start Clevinger, it's that I think you know that every 3 or 4 starts, maybe 5 starts, whatever happens with Tomlin, he might have a bad start, but he's shown he can give you good starts. And look at Devinsky's game logs this year, once, twice, three times, four, five, six times, seven times.
This episode is brought to you by counting.
Counting, yes. 7 times Devinsky's gone more than 1 inning out of the bullpen, and 4-5 times he's gone more than 2. Twice he's gone more than 4. Mm-hmm. And
remind you.
Yes.
That's how the Indians used Zach McAllister when he was first placed in the bullpen. You kind of lose that longevity out of a guy after years of being used in the bullpen. But when they first put him in the bullpen, he was a multiple inning guy.
And he's not as good
because he'd been a starter for so long. Well, no, my problem is that I feel it's a complete waste of Clevinger. And I feel it's another mistake, just like Michael Martinez over Eric Gonzalez was. And if you're going to say that Michael Martinez over Eric Gonzalez wasn't a mistake, then why did they cut Michael Martinez and bring up Eric Gonzalez?
Because
Did any of them do anything in the last 2 weeks to prove themselves different than what we thought they were before the season started? Other than Daniel Robertson healing, they weren't going to start the year with Daniel Robertson anyway. Like, I don't think they ever had that as an option. He wasn't listed. When they listed the three guys, it was, who was Ronnie Rodriguez, who never had a chance. There was no way at all he was ever going to be the guy. I don't even know why they said him. Eric Gonzalez and Michael Martinez. Those were the only three guys they listed for that spot when the season started. So Robertson's injury had nothing to do with it, although he did get called up almost immediately after he was better.
But that's because there were injuries.
So what changed
on Cleveland?
Well, yeah, that was because the outfield injuries, but they also brought up Eric Gonzalez, and they didn't need to do that. So what changed? All of a sudden, Michael Martinez sucks.
What I really thought.
It's rhetorical. It doesn't matter.
We had this conversation a few weeks ago about the Yandy Diaz thing, about, they don't really.
What is shitty defense?
Yeah, they say one thing, they do another, proving they don't believe in the thing they're saying. Because they're so good at.
And that's why Root Sports is better than STO. I feel like this is what we should end on. I'll tell you, you turn on Root Sports for 30 seconds, they bring up, this is your starting pitcher today. These are the three stats that we pick to tell you about the starting pitcher. Now, if STO did it, what are the three stats they're going to show you? Win-loss record, ERA, and strikeouts, maybe?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Something like that. So on Root Sports, the three stats that they showed you, batting average on balls in play, FIP, and hard hit percent. Now, I wouldn't put batting average on balls in play up there because it's not a skill stat to me. I would go with something else. But hard hit percent, I would probably do K for 9. And FIP, like, that's what you should be showing people on the. That's how you teach your fan base not to be ignorant assholes. And the Indians, it seems like they like having an ignorant fan base. It's really the only explanation of why they run with Rick Manning and Jenson Lewis. And why they put out things like Yandy Diaz can't play defense, when if you have the internet, you can look up scouting reports of many people who have seen Yandy Diaz that say, yes, he can play defense.
And then you watch him play
defense. I remember when Yandy was first. When Yandy was first coming up, I saw some reports that he was all glove.
Yes.
And then a year later, he's all bat, no glove. Like, how does that change that quickly? So I feel like the Indians want. They have to explicitly want their fans to be ignorant at this point. That's the only thing that explains how they act with things like the Michael Martinez stuff, the Josh Tomlin stuff, the Jenson Lewis bullshit. That's the only way it makes sense. Maybe that suits them.
No, I agree.
Because not like people in Houston are so much further advanced. Maybe they are. I don't know.
Houston is a big city.
George Bush is really advanced. I know. He went to Yale or something.
Oh, boy. I'm going to stay out of that one.
Real smart guy. Everyone knows how smart George Bush is, and he's, like, typical of Houston.
Abu Ghraib. Abu Ghraib.
But before Justin says something even more offensive, let's wrap this one up. Remember, the Cavs will be back, and they're probably going to win their next game. I mean, seriously, they're not. I watched this entire game, and I thought they were going to. Shut up. I thought they were going to win up to the last second. The Indians are probably going to win their next 15 in a row. the Cavs will probably win. Let's say the Cavs win their, what, next five in a row and then lose four in a row.
Ooh.
That would piss some people off, huh?
Well, negativity to end this one.
Was that my math right? No, I don't think they will. I think the Cavs will probably. I know nothing about basketball. Don't ask. I have not seen the Golden State Warriors play since Game 7 of the last year's finals. How the fuck could I know anything about them?
This is why we are hiring more people for Burning River Basketball.
Yeah, if you know more about basketball than I do, talk to Ben Belden. Because he knows more about basketball than I do, and he'll be a better judge of whether you know more than I do than I will be. Okay, that's way too much for today. We will catch you next week on Sunday, hopefully. Maybe not. Maybe we'll mix it up and do a different day, now that I'm thinking about it. But we'll catch you next time. Hopefully, Danny and Ben will be back with you. Of course, Mr. Goofball has left for greener pastures. Ooh. So he probably won't be back. But he might be. Shade. You never know. No, I've got no hate for him. I'm just saying he's probably not going to be on the podcast anymore because he did a little quitting. But it's good for him. It's good stuff.
We're proud of him.
I love everybody.
Mostly.
In the whole world. Even Michael Martinez. I feel like I did this on a podcast last year. It might have been with Ryan Thompson on Tribe Time. What was that show called?
Tribe Time Now.
Was it Tribe Time Now? It's been a long time.
I don't know.
I think that's what it was called. Either way, I swear we did that when I went through and talked about all the different people I love, like Josh Tomlin and Michael Martinez. And
don't lie to your, I just don't want them fan base.
I just don't want them playing on my baseball team.
Don't say that.
I like them as
people. Another thing like the Indians.
I like them as people. I don't want them anywhere near my baseball team. And stop trying to hurt Kevin Love. That's it. Go Cavs. Go Tribe. Have a great night.